DW, Living Planet, with Sam Baker.
Welcome to Living Planet. Ongoing political crises haven't made it easy for the Caribbean state of Haiti to deal with natural disasters or the impacts of an increasingly unpredictable climate. To cope with this uncertainty, some farmers are now employing ecological farming methods in order to feed their families. Once France's most profitable colony, Haiti declared independence in 1804, becoming the first country founded by former slaves. In the intervening centuries, Haiti has seen a number of dictators and kleptocrats plunder the nation's rich natural resources. Today, Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Many small-scale farmers manage only a meager existence on tiny plots of land situated on steep slopes. While many leave for slums in the capital or to seek a better life abroad, 30,000 Haitians have decided to face the challenges of farming in an era of increasingly heavy rain, drought, and soil erosion. They're adapting their crops to the changing climate, a huge task, but one they see as their only option, as our reporter Thomas Kuhem discovered on his journey to Haiti. His documentary is presented by Sue Cox.
The way ahead is blocked by hooded demonstrators and barricades of burning tires. I won't be able to go any further. My scheduled interviews in Lekai, in southwest Haiti, will have to take place another day. Bertrand, my interpreter, is trapped there in his apartment by the general strike and sends me an angry message on WhatsApp.
I consider this president as a liar. The biggest president liar that Haiti ever has. He kept on saying that he's going to give everybody food, give electricity. Those prime ministers, those ministers, we have to get rid of them, man. There should be a real revolution made in this country because there are so many people suffering in this country. Meanwhile, a minority of people keeping the money of this country.
I experienced a completely different Haiti yesterday in the mountain village of Gentillot-Gouin, just outside the city. Amid chirping birds, farmer's wife, Marilyn Pierre, showed me her heavily laden breadfruit tree.
I grow a lot of healthy food in this garden. Most we eat ourselves. Some I sell at the market, like those bananas growing over there, which are almost ripe. At the foot of the banana trees, I planted corn for my children. And with that okra over there, I cook gumbo, a tasty stew. The coconut palm trees and the big mango tree up there were planted by my father. I planted the lemon trees. There are so many fruits and vegetables growing in my garden now, much more than before.
Haiti, on the western end of the Caribbean island of Hispaniola, is very different from the Dominican Republic in the east. There, the landscape is dominated by dense forests and sandy beaches, a holiday paradise visited by around 5 million tourists every year. In Haiti, the forests have been chopped down, leaving eroded hills and mountains. The capital, Port-au-Prince, looks like a garbage dump. Around 11 million inhabitants, the descendants of slaves abducted from West Africa, live in this country that's slightly smaller than Belgium. As the Western Hemisphere's poorest nation, Haiti has been ruled by dictators and kleptocrats since it gained independence from France in 1804. Among them were François Papadoc Duvalier and his son Jean-Claude Baby Doc in the second half of the 20th century. Hundreds of thousands of poor families eke out a meagre existence on tiny plots of land that cling to the steep slopes, buffeted by increasingly strong hurricanes and suffering from the effects of heavy rain, drought and soil erosion. Many have left, bound for the slums that surround Port-au-Prince, or to seek a better life abroad. But around 30,000 Haitian farmers have decided to tackle the challenge of climate change head-on. They've adapted their crops to the increasingly unpredictable climate, enabling their families to live a life of dignity. For these climate heroes, giving up isn't an option, even though it can often feel like a hopeless undertaking. I stand with Marilyn Pierre at the edge of a pond in Gentillot-Gouin, surveying her crops. The mother of eight laughs often and radiates cheerfulness and joie de vivre. But she also has an air of determination. Like most Haitians, she calls her field of nearly half a hectare a garden. 20 metres wide, it begins at the pond and continues up the surrounding slopes. Rows of banana plants grow nearby, full of clusters of the yellow-green fruit. Corn grows in the shade below. Marilyn also cultivates beans, tomatoes and spinach. As the slope becomes steeper, it gives way to terraces that have been fortified with pineapple plants, their young fruits glowing a blue-red. Further up, the hill has been stabilised with two rows of boulders which support a thriving plot of pigeon peas and potatoes. The farmers in Gentillot-Gouin have been using agroecological farming systems for the last 8 years with the support of the Association of Executives for the Protection of the Environment, or ACAPE. The sustainable practices are adapted to climate change.
We
used to grow only one or two crops, bananas and corn or yams. We didn't even care much about the topsoil. When heavy rain fell, it just washed down into the pond. Since joining forces with ACAP, we've built terraces and planted pineapple and elephant grass. These terraces store the rainwater and help the plants to grow. And now, throughout the whole year, I have produce I can sell at the market. Papayas, mangoes and lemons, potatoes and manioc. That means I have a little money all year round.
A short man sporting a red T-shirt comes over to join us. It's Rico Bousseau, Marilyn's cousin. He says trees will have to be planted in Haiti again. Many trees. They shade the crops and help to maintain the soil with their roots. Marilyn's field features a lemon tree, two mango trees, and a breadfruit tree.
Until a few years ago, we had almost no trees. And that's why our wells were drying up so quickly during dry weather. Over the last 10 years, we've planted many fruit trees, and now we're harvesting plenty of fruit. This well here has been supplying a steady source of water for the last 4 years. My family drinks from it, and I also use it to water our garden.
A day earlier. I have just arrived in Haiti, and my driver picks me up at the airport of Port-au-Prince. We head out to Les Cayes by car, passing long queues at the gas stations, where young men with canisters are mobbing the pumps. Higher up on the slopes of the coastal mountains, the mansions of the wealthy elite sit behind walls and barbed wire. We come to the port area, and my driver points out Cité Soleil, one of Haiti's largest slums. Pulling out his phone, he plays what he calls the slums anthem. Cité Soleil is a city made up of rusty metal sheds, home to more than 400,000 people who languish in the heat and dust. Children rummage through piles of trash, women do their laundry in the gutters, and girls stand in the mud next to the road trying to sell mangoes and cornmeal. There are no police here, says my driver, only criminal gangs who terrorize people. The trip from Port-au-Prince to Les Cayes takes about 5 hours, winding past banana and sugarcane plantations owned by the few rich Haitians, past eroded hills with sparse vegetation. Worried, my driver looks at the time, but it's already too late. At the roundabout in the centre of Les Cayes, the first burning tyres are visible. Nearby sits a police vehicle manned with officers wearing masks. We wind around the smoking tires and finally arrive at my hotel, a sprawling facility huddled behind walls topped by barbed wire. In the evening, I can hear singing from a nearby church. I think back to my conversation with Barbara Kupper, an expert on Haiti with the Catholic aid organization Misereo in Aachen. She told me that in the 18th century, Haiti was France's most profitable colony. It supplied half of Europe's coffee, as well as sugar and tropical wood for the courts of European noblemen. Mahogany, bloodwood, and ironwood. But encouraged by the French Revolution, slaves living in Haiti rose up at the turn of the 19th century and fought for their independence. They eventually won their struggle, but were forced to pay France compensation for their freedom, around 20 billion euros over more than a century.
Sie mussten für ihre Freiheit Holz liefern.
They had to ship goods to win their freedom, wood and sugar that at the time was treated like white gold. As a result, more forested areas were cut down. From 1915 to 1934, Haiti was under U.S. occupation. The Americans chopped down and exported hundreds of thousands of tons of wood, leading to further deforestation. The clear-cutting continued under the Duvalier regime, with the money earned from wood sales stashed away somewhere. And deforestation continues today. 70% of the energy produced in Haiti's households is derived from burning wood. Charcoal is one of the country's most lucrative businesses, simply because no other fuel is available.
Over time, most of Haiti's farmers even cut down their coffee bushes, frustrated by fluctuating prices on the world market. And with no profitable alternative, they ended up felling the trees that had once shaded the coffee bushes. In 1900, Haiti, with 1 million inhabitants, was half covered in forest. More than a century later, with 11 million people, forests now cover barely 2% of the country. Small-scale farmers produce nearly half of the food consumed in Haiti, mostly on clear-cut slopes that are vulnerable to sun and storm. There's enough rain in the Caribbean to grow crops, but the water often falls on bare, parched soil. It has no chance to filter down into the ground. Instead, it simply washes away the valuable topsoil into nearby rivers, leading to floods and soil erosion. Climate change has hit the Caribbean particularly hard, with shorter, heavier rainy seasons, longer droughts and more devastating hurricanes. Hurricane Matthew, one of the worst storms in history, slammed the mountain village of Gentilcoin with full force in 2016, says farmer Misei Altima in his grey mud hut.
Matthew was a terrible hurricane. In my 48 years, I've never seen such a strong storm. I still tremble today when I think back to how we ran out of our house shortly before it collapsed. My neighbors and I lost all our animals, and my kids got sick because we didn't have enough clean water for weeks. The weather has become strange in recent years. When we desperately need rain for our yams and vegetables, then nothing falls. But then, just before the harvest, a cloudburst comes and flushes everything away. And a short time later, the burning sun parches the ground.
Political chaos, bitter poverty, back-breaking work and crops that are destroyed again and again. I speak with Haitian human rights activist Colette Lespinasse by phone because of the street protests about how all this has affected the people.
We Haitians are chronically traumatized. It's been said that we are so resilient that we continue to fight and find a way to survive despite all the difficulties. In recent years, however, we've experienced the unimaginable. In 2010, an earthquake claimed some 300,000 victims and laid waste to our capital city, worse than any war. Then, in October 2016, there was Matthew, the worst hurricane ever to hit Haiti. Imagine a hurricane with wind speeds of 250 kilometers per hour, and the people only had their poorly built huts as shelter. They stared death in the eye. Added to these natural disasters are lack of food and the constant political crisis. All this eats away at people here. And in recent years, we've seen a rapid increase in diseases that were once rare in Haiti. Heart attacks, strokes, diabetes. That can be linked to a poor diet, but stress and psychological trauma are also a major factor.
Back to the mountain village of Gentilcoin, Marilyn's cousin Rico plucks a fruit that looks like a long pea pod from a tree with small round leaves and deems it delicious. In fact, the fruit of the Moringa oleifera tree, also known as the horseradish tree or Moringa, contains plenty of vitamin A and C, calcium and magnesium. The leaves serve as nutritious cattle feed, while the seeds provide an excellent vegetable oil. The area here is filled with many young trees.
We planted the acacia trees to anchor the soil and later to have it as a source of wood for building and for charcoal. The soil isn't good enough up here for fruit trees yet, but it's getting better and better. Acacia leaves are a good fertilizer.
Fruit trees in Haiti can be harvested after only 4 or 5 years, says Bertrand, a young agricultural engineer from the ACAPE organization, who is acting as my translator. Acacia and cedars take a little more time, 10 to 12 years. Before these trees were planted, says Bertrand, the slope we're standing on was blackened once or twice a year by ash. Farmers would burn the remains of their crops, destroying valuable fertilizer without knowing it.
The burning of the soil we consider it as a crime, as you take a person, you kill it, because there are some really teeny insects in the soil. They call them, you can't see them unless you see them in laboratory. Since you burn the soil, they have an important role they play in the soil. They activated the soil. Since you burn the soil, you kill the mini microorganism, you kill them.
Nearby, a group of young people is enjoying a tea break, and I look down the slope in astonishment. The ground is completely covered with decomposing plants, as far as I can see. It's a form of mulch that helps to retain moisture and fertilize the soil, says Marilyn. No one here has money to spare for artificial fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Instead, farmers here use a homemade mixture of neem oil, pepper and garlic to fight pests. Another option is tobacco and basil. Earlier, says Marilyn, an infestation of her family's sole crop would be a major threat to their livelihood. Today, a variety of crops ensures that at least some will survive. At the other end of the village, I meet up with Joël Gaspar, another farmer. He owns cows, goats and sheep, pigs, chickens and turkeys. Earlier, he tells me, most of his animals would roam freely and eat whatever they could find, even in his neighbour's fields. Inevitably, that would lead to disputes with other farmers. Today, Joël's yard is fenced in with cactus hedges, and his house is surrounded by stables.
Goats, sheep and cows are now always secured in the stable or tied up. I used to do the same with my pigs, but they are fairly sensitive animals and can easily get sick if kept in a stable. That's why I sold most of my pigs and got more chickens. Some are still running around freely, but I keep my valuable laying hens here in the stable.
Always busy, Joël grabs a set of pliers, a hammer, chicken wire and a handful of nails to repair a hole in the goat shed. Does he ever rest, I ask? Joel answers with a smile, saying he doesn't work any more than before. The difference now is that the work is worth it. Though that's not the case for everyone, he adds. Increasingly, farmers don't have enough land to make it work. They end up having to lease land and hand over half of their crops to the landowner. On the way back to Likai, the smoke of the barricades comes into view. We have to take a detour around the city. At the only filling station in the area, motorcyclists are fighting over the last few drops of gasoline. Bertrand, my translator, is on edge. His wife is expecting him to bring home food and diapers for his 2-year-old son and 3-month-old twins. But where can he shop if all the businesses in Likai are taking part in the general strike? Bertrand tells me that many of his friends have left the country, emigrating to the United States, to Brazil, to the Dominican Republic. 3 million Haitians work abroad, transferring about $3 billion every year to help their families back home survive. But Haitians who are leaving now are finding it increasingly hard to find a job, he says.
Most of them are sorry because they have gone there. They're running for misery, they go there, they find misery without doing anything. Some of them declaring that it's a waste time. Not only they spend much money to go there, when they got there, they just stay in a house and spending time without doing anything. An example of my own little brother. He's a teacher. He speaks English as I do. But he had in mind going to Brazil. In mind, he will have a better living in Brazil. He got to Brazil. Until now, he's running on 1 year. He doesn't find any job, anything. Now he is on the way to come back home.
The headquarters of the ACAPE organization, not far from my hotel, is surrounded by farmland. It looks like a garden center. In the attached nursery, thousands of acacia and fruit tree seedlings stand in black pots. The group's director, Raymond Delenois, says ACAPE is currently working in 10 villages. The organization has planted some 300,000 trees over the last decade. 60% have survived, even though Hurricane Matthew took a toll. ACAPE is part of a network of 40 organizations in Haiti focused on agroecological climate adaptation. Together, they've planted several million trees and permanently adapted the agricultural practices of around 30,000 families to climate change. They've also helped farmers minimize post-harvest losses.
We help farmers to further process their agricultural products as much as we can. They can take manioc, for example, and turn it into flour that won't spoil for 8 months. They can make honey and peanut butter, and apples can be made into a long-lasting jelly. ACAPE has set up a group of 70 women who manufacture and sell all of these products, some of them even abroad.
By following these environmental protection rules, farmers in villages such as Gentillot-Gouin have been able to significantly alleviate poverty, says Raymond. Hurricanes, droughts, or crop failures are now seldom an existential threat for these families.
We haven't done a scientific study of how people's lives have improved compared to their situation 5 or 6 years ago. But back then, they only grew 1 or 2 products, and they had no food security. Today, they produce dozens of foods, and the situation has to be very bad for them to run out of food.
In the neighboring villages, farmers have continued to grow only a few main crops on unterraced slopes, says Delenois. However, many have begun to mimic what they see in ACAPE projects, and local mayors have asked that their villages be included in the ACAPE program. But that costs money. Money that ACAPE doesn't have. Only a handful of international aid organizations are supporting the agroecological climate protection movement in Haiti. The largest among them is the German relief organization Miserior, which has been active in Haiti for the last 20 years. Annika Schröder, a climate expert with Miserior, says the reform of small-scale farming in the region is a sustainable solution in the fight against rural poverty. Tens of thousands of farming families have adapted to climate change and made a significant contribution to fighting it.
The enormous diversity in these gardens means that no matter how extreme the weather or how bad the infestation, part of the harvest is always saved. These farming systems are extremely resilient. At the same time, these gardens can show people that they're capable of doing so much more than they realize. And that gives them the courage to try new things, like growing new plants, using new seeds, and exchanging knowledge with other farmers.
Annika estimates that tens of thousands of these climate heroes have brought new life to Haiti's desolate mountains.
Unser Gefühl ist im Moment.
We believe that these agroecology projects will continue to make an important contribution to the fight against global climate change over the coming decades by empowering people and helping them to adapt to the effects.
Over the next few days, all the roads to the hotel remain blocked. Online, I read about other street barricades. Opposition leaders are calling for more demonstrations. Food in the hotel is growing scarce. In the morning, the kitchen sets out some thawed bread and jam, and for lunch and dinner, all that remains is chewy beef with rice. No fruit, no vegetables, no eggs. The hotel owner only runs the generator for about an hour in the evening. She doesn't know when she'll be able to get more diesel fuel. I sit with a few employees from the US Embassy, and we wonder whether helicopters can get us out of here. Nearby, four American missionaries sit at a table for hours playing cards. My translator, Bertrand, who is stuck in his apartment without food and diapers, sends me a bitter WhatsApp message.
My friend, I cannot tell you how bad I feel about this situation. How misery is worse in this situation, in this country. That's over. I feel so sad, man. I just say sometimes why I was a Haitian. Wherever you go, you say you Haitian. They consider you like nothing, man. Because of those mother leaders.
On my fourth day at the hotel, I finally have a chance to leave. The trip to the airport takes us past still-smoking tire remnants and barricades in the streets of several villages and heavy stones that have been pushed to the sides of the street. I think back to Silio Casayol, a farmer in Gentilhot-Gouin. An old man with sunken cheeks, he looked thoughtful but radiated confidence, an attitude reflected in his bright blue T-shirt with yellow-red flowers. 2 weeks ago, his 20-year-old daughter went to Port-au-Prince to find a better life for herself.
So many young people are leaving. They find the work in the field too hard. And we old ones stay behind. It can't go on like that. We, along with teachers, need to tell them that it can be worthwhile to work in agriculture, if you do it right. Every once in a while, the headmaster in the valley school allows us to speak with the students. We explain what we are doing. A whole new kind of farming, a better life than with a miserable job in the city. And in fact, a few young people who did not want to farm before are now helping their parents in the fields.
As we arrive in Port-au-Prince, the morning sun shines on the melted tires in the streets and the piles of garbage drenched by the rain. Young men standing on the roadside are suspicious of our car, the only vehicle in sight. The road to the airport is clear.
That report by Thomas Kuhem was presented by Sue Cox. You can find this and other Living Planet episodes on our website, dw.com, or by subscribing to Living Planet wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sam Baker. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more environment stories from around the globe.
Non, yo apprendre, mais respecter mon nom, et yo apprendre.